This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Perhaps the most famous private art collection in the world is on the verge of leaving its longtime home in the Philadelphia suburbs. The Barnes Collection includes scores of works by Cézanne, Matisse, Renoir, more than 8,000 pieces in all, worth over $6 billion. Yet the Barnes Foundation is struggling to stay afloat. Three charitable foundations are backing a plan to move the collection into the city. Philadelphia's mayor and Pennsylvania's governor support the move downtown, but a group of students at the Barnes says the collection's founder wanted the art to stay in his home, and they're asking a judge to let them argue that case in court. From member station WHYY, Joel Rose reports.
William Phillips was a 20-year-old student at Philadelphia Central Evening High School when a teacher introduced him to art. A few years later, in 1941, Phillips was one of several African-American students invited to attend art appreciation classes at the Barnes. Phillips remembers that founder Albert Barnes would sometimes mingle with the students before class.
He would come to the main gallery, sit in an armchair, and smoke a cigarette, and generally carry on in an informal way until class time.
Phillips says he embraced Barnes's unusual approach to art appreciation, what the collector called the objective method.
To analyze by looking at the painting, pointing at the painting, not trotting in how the painters lived or how they ate their breakfast and drank their beer, but how they painted.
Phillips is one of three students asking a court to block the Barnes move. And he's exactly the kind of student Albert Barnes seemed to want. Phillips came from a working-class family in North Philadelphia, and he had no preconceived notions about what art should be. Barnes grew up in South Philadelphia. He made a fortune in pharmaceuticals, and then started collecting art, which he displayed at his estate in Lower Merion, just outside the city. Barnes feuded with the Philadelphia art establishment, says writer John Anderson. In his book, Art Held Hostage, Anderson says Barnes wanted to display the collection on his own terms.
If you think about Barnes, this was a man who grew up absolutely dirt poor in the slums of Philadelphia, had much to overcome and did overcome it, and for 80 years this is a man who led a really sort of unconquerable life. It was only in death, or more specifically 50 years after his death, only then was Dr. Barnes finally cheated out of his great legacy.
Anderson is referring to a decade-long controversy surrounding the Barnes Foundation. In 1994, the Barnes's then-chairman, Richard Glanton, asked a court to break the foundation's terms of indenture and allow some of the paintings to leave the mansion for a tour to raise money. Despite the $17 million the tour generated, the Barnes is again in financial trouble. Last year, three charitable foundations offered to help raise $150 million to move the art to a more accessible location in the city. But when he established the foundation, Albert Barnes specified that the collection should stay in Lower Merion. And that's exactly why he hired the best legal talent of his day, says writer John Anderson.
Dr. Albert Barnes saw the case example of his friend and lawyer, John Johnson, who was one of the preeminent corporate lawyers of the turn of the century, a great Philadelphia lawyer, but also a great Philadelphia art collector.
John G. Johnson left his collection to what was then the Pennsylvania Museum of Art, but he, too, specified that it had to be displayed in his home. After Johnson's death, the museum went to court and received permission to move the art to its galleries. When it came to his own collection, Albert Barnes took no chances, says Anderson.
He didn't want to see the Barnes collection loaded into the trucks and moved into the Philadelphia Museum of Art the way the Johnson collection had been.
Because the current petition to move the Barnes art collection would again break the foundation's terms of indenture, it needs court approval. The state's top lawyer, Attorney General Mike Fisher, supports the move, despite the fact that it contradicts the carefully crafted document Albert Barnes left after his death.
That's why, as we looked at this petition, we looked at it carefully. We're satisfied that the resources available to the Barnes are at a point that it's perilously close to making them insolvent. We think this is far preferable, and I believe if Albert Barnes were alive today, he would put his stamp of approval on this.
When the move was proposed a year ago, its main opponents were art critics and Lincoln University. Barnes gave the small, historically black college in Chester County substantial influence over how his foundation is run, an influence the university stands to lose under the terms of the proposed move. But Lincoln dropped its objections last month when Pennsylvania Governor Edward Rendell promised to find $180 million in state and private funds for the school. Los Angeles Times art critic Christopher Knight says the Lincoln deal is proof that the move has more to do with economics than art appreciation.
So far, to date, the combined cost of moving the Barnes Foundation, of getting Lincoln University on board, approaches $250 million. Cultural tourism is big business. It will destroy the Barnes Foundation, but perhaps it will be an economic engine for redevelopment.
The proponents of the move cite a clause in the Barnes Terms of Indenture that says if it's no longer economically feasible to maintain an independent collection, it could be subsumed into a larger, unspecified institution. Author John Anderson says the Barnes' current financial problems have not reached that level.
It's not a rescue. A rescue would cost a quarter of what they're talking about. What they're talking about is a very carefully studied, very carefully lawyered corporate takeover.
A corporate takeover implies that there is one entity taking over another. That's completely not true.
Rebecca Reimel is president of the Pew Charitable Trusts. It's one of the three organizations supporting the move, along with the Lenfest and Annenberg Foundations.
There is no acquirer or acquiree in this. The Barnes Foundation will be independent. It will have a board well prepared to carry out their stewardship responsibility for the Barnes.
Reimel says a new Barnes Gallery in downtown Philadelphia would make the art accessible to an estimated 300,000 to 350,000 visitors a year. That's a lot more than the 60,000 that are currently allowed to see the collection each year. But art critic Christopher Knight doubts that the unique experience of seeing the art the way Barnes arranged it in his house would survive the move.
You can't just pick up the Barnes Foundation and move it to a tourist strip in downtown Philadelphia and expect the experience to be the same, any more than you could, say, move the Sistine ceiling from a Cardinal's Chapel in the Vatican and expect that experience to remain the same.
But a downtown location would make the art more accessible to the very people Albert Barnes wanted to inspire, says Bernard Watson, chairman of the Barnes Foundation.
Particularly those who are from working families and minorities, in addition to have the kind of endowment and the kind of programs which will make it possible for the Barnes to concentrate on what its mission should be, not survival.
That argument hasn't convinced retired civil servant and current Barnes student William Phillips.
This is absolutely insane. I think it would be along the lines of criminal, some high form of criminality.
A judge has yet to decide whether Phillips and the other two students will get to make that argument at trial. A hearing is expected later this year or early next. For NPR News, I'm Joel Rose in Philadelphia.